You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
Rule number one, you will not touch anything.
What about the floor?
Yes, you may touch the floor.
What about the air?
Yes, you may touch the air.
What about this?
Ah! Where did you get that?
Found it.
Okay, rule number two, you will not bother me while I'm working. Rule number three, you will not cry, or whine, or laugh, or giggle, or sneeze, or burp, or fart. So, no annoying sounds, right?
Does this count as annoying?
Okay, they caught the bank robber. And if you're wondering why are we playing one of the funniest scenes from Despicable Me, the bank robber looks just like Gru. I'm sorry, he does. Masked and all, wearing a Chiefs hoodie. If you missed the news overnight, they caught the bank robber.
Let's just say you always know which way he's looking because his face is pointing that way.
He looks like Gru. And I put out his, you know, the surveillance photos that the FBI sent out when this happened. And I said, if you've seen Gru around town, please call the feds. He robbed a bank today. Here's the yeah, but. Two yeah, buts. Number one, the Chiefs hoodie he was wearing was his initial mistake. Or he might have gotten away with this, Sam. A witness saw someone ditch a red pickup truck and get out walking wearing a very identifiable Chiefs hoodie.
Distinct, yeah.
Very distinct. It's silver. It had some Chiefs writing down the middle of the back of it.
Said the word Chiefs vertically. Which, you know, is somewhat popular, but not everybody has that design.
And it's a silver hoodie. It's not red. Anyway, that's number one. Someone saw this, then saw this guy had robbed the bank, said, I immediately recognized the Chiefs jersey because when I saw it, I was like, that's an unusual jersey. Mm-hmm. Calls police. Number two. His name is Daniel Young. His name is not Gru. He is 41 years old, and he is in a lot of trouble.
Allegedly.
He is charged with armed bank robbery and brandishing a firearm during crime and violence. Okay? Court records today show he admitted that he held up the Country Club Bank branch on Parallel Parkway a couple weeks ago. He claims he did it because his daughter is sick, and because of the medical bills, he is broke.
Oh, the crime of passion, desperation.
That he is struggling financially.
That would fall under crime of passion, right? After you're doing something.
Illness and death of his daughter in late 2024. He told agents he turned off his cell phone to avoid being tracked. Chose the bank because he had been inside before to help his son opening an account there. And he, quote, faked a limp during the robbery because, quote, he had seen it in the movies. I don't know why the line about his daughter, people have had very mixed reactions about this on social. They're like, not saying this is okay, but
he and was I'm just like, a dad trying to do what he thought was best.
I don't think there's a yeah, but when you brandish a weapon at someone in a bank. I'm sorry, those tellers are traumatized after something
like this.
Well,
and I think it would be a totally different story. Well, obviously, it would be a totally different story had this ended up in a fatal exchange of gunfire. Nobody would be saying, well, think about his daughter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry the man lost his daughter, but there you can't go around pointing guns at people and robbing banks, Gru.
Also, ooh, the whole crime of passion because I need to pay the medical bills and I'm broke now because my daughter had an illness. You said his daughter passed away in 2024?
Yes.
And we haven't been able to...
Oh, those medical bills will get you. I'm not denying that. I'm just passing this on. They caught him, and the reaction was not what I thought it would be on social because of the detail that he lost his daughter. Not making it a topic, just passing it on. They got him.
I don't think that's close enough to be able to claim
one.
That.
Number two, I almost died on the way into work, and I want to tell you what happened and then ask you if it's ever happened to you. Have you ever seen, driving along the highway, the gigantic alligator-looking piece of rubber tire that has shed off of a semi?
They do call them highway gators. Yeah.
It's what they look like. I've seen them all over the place. I've never seen one smoke and explode and come off into 1,000 pieces like I did today. I am on the highway, Dan, on my way in. And at first I thought it was mud clumps coming off of this semi. He was a lane over, but driving ahead of me.
Oh, you witnessed the actual detaching of the gator.
Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. It was hazy. And I thought, is that dirt? What is going on? Because it happened in a split second. There's these things flinging, fling, fling, fling. Like, what the hell is that? Then the pieces got bigger, and then I noticed the haze. I start getting over, way far left.
Smart, very smart.
The haze was not haze. It was the smoke from the burning tire. When those things come off, you guys, they do not come off in one gigantic, nice, neat piece.
No, it's rather violent.
It was a violent explosion of tread all over the drivers behind this poor guy. Now, I don't think he did anything wrong. He got over as soon as he could onto the shoulder on the highway. The rest of us are dodging these pieces of tire like we're playing Atari Pole Position circa 1981.
And if you hit one of those pieces and it gets kicked up and hits the bottom of your car, it can cause some serious damage.
Sam, it was flying all over the highway.
So we were driving to Columbia one time. I was in Mary Beth's car, thankfully, because if we were in my truck, I probably would be dead. And we were pulling up next to a semi, and I could hear what sounded like one of the tires getting ready to go because they tend to lock up first. That's why you saw the smoke.
Yes.
And then some of that rubber starts to fly off. And I looked at Mary Beth and I said, I'm just going to slow down and back up a little bit here and see what happens. And I am not kidding you. Right as I said that, and we were in the left lane, the semi was in the right lane because we were about to pass it when I noticed what was going on. As I said, I'm going to go ahead and slow down. One of the front axle, so you know there's two axles on the back of a semi trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the front axle tires started to lose its tread. And in this case, it did come off in one piece. And I watched that entire tread go directly over the windshield. Probably missed us by 6 inches.
It just came up and over.
I think, honestly, had the wind not been pushing it upward, it would have hit the windshield. I genuinely thought I was dead.
And those are heavy.
This one was in so many pieces. And look, you know me. I'm a huge backer and proponent of the safety record of our semi-truck drivers. I think they are among the safest drivers on the road. Are there headlines here and there? Rarely, yes. But by and large, I think they are among the safest drivers on the road. I really do. I don't know that this man or woman did anything wrong. I've just never seen it right in front of me. And the only thing I can tell you is if it happens, get as far away from that truck as you can, as quickly as you can.
They say, the experts, that underinflation is the most common cause of tire blowouts.
Well, and it is 142,000 degrees outside.
I was going to say, I think it's probably more the heat right now because they do, the way they run those old semi tires is when the tread wears down, they just scrape them and retread them, which is why they come off in the gator like that.
All right. So three things we're going to remember in the opening segment of the Dana and Parks program today. If the tire comes off, get away from it. Run like hell. Gru has been caught. He's sorry.
No
fogging. He's had some family trauma. And France and Spain are playing right now. We still would like you to call in. 913-586-7798. When we get back, a new law in one state that says if you are on a highway riding as a passenger in someone's car and that person gets pulled over by police, all of the passengers have to give their IDs? What?
First, the flock cameras, now
I sent this to Sam last night, and I go, wait, read this. Are they saying what I think they're saying? I haven't done anything wrong. I'm just sitting back reading a book in the back seat.
They're saying it.
913-586-7798. We begin with that on Dana and Parks straight ahead. Okay, help us untangle the very confusing web of laws across the country that we're about to talk about. We're going to start with Ohio because this headline, when I saw it last night, I went, what?
House Bill 492 in Ohio.
What?
The Signed recently by Governor Mike DeWine.
New Ohio law. We'll get to the other states in a minute because some of these are. The new Ohio law requires drivers. Okay. and passengers to provide personal information during traffic stops. Requires, I don't even want to talk about requiring a driver to give their ID. I assume if I'm driving a car and the police officer pulls me over in all 50 states, if they say license and registration, please, I just assume that that's something I'm supposed to hand him or her.
And I could be mistaken, but I've watched a lot of the audit videos on YouTube. So don't quote me on this and text line if I'm wrong, please let me know. But I'm pretty sure in some states, and if not most states, you don't even have to technically hand your license over. You just have to present it.
Okay.
But now we're stretching that to passengers?
So this is why I'm setting the rules up for this conversation. I don't even want to get into the nuances of the driver. Because, I just assume in all 50 states, if they say, let me see your driver's license, I'm driving a car, here's my driver's license. This goes a bridge too far. The Ohio law says passengers, when asked, now have to hand over identification during a traffic stop. It is Governor Mike DeWine's bill that he signed, House Bill 492.
The new law makes declining to provide a name as a passenger, declining to provide a name, address, or date of birth to law enforcement officers during a traffic stop is a fourth degree misdemeanor.
You can be arrested. What if, let me just read the story, then we'll come back. I have so many questions about this. A newly signed Ohio law regarding traffic stops is already drawing criticism from defense attorneys who warn it could infringe on civil rights. Governor Mike DeWine signed the measure on Tuesday, changing what drivers and passengers must tell police during a traffic stop. Under the law, anyone in a vehicle stopped by law enforcement is required to provide their name, address, and date of birth when asked by an officer. The change has prompted concern from some who say the requirement on passengers goes too far. As a passenger, quoting here from one resident of Ohio, you shouldn't have to do anything you don't want to. Quoting here from another, that's kind of crazy. This feels like an invasion of privacy. Now, supporters of the law argue the requirement is rooted in safety.
It always is.
If there are more than one individual in the car, it's for the officer's safety. They ask them. Some might have an outstanding warrant that you might not know about by running a plate. Quoting here from the vice president of the Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association. But legal experts say the issue is not yet settled. One defense attorney says this law is government overreach, period, and predicted it will face constitutional challenges, particularly over the Fifth Amendment. If you invoke your Fifth Amendment right about your name, address, or date of birth, quoting here from an attorney, I believe there's going to be a court challenge here. As this law is written, there is not a Fifth Amendment constitutional right to withhold this information. When asked whether a legal fight is likely, the attorney responded, I would bet the farm and the tractor on it.
Some supporters are also pointing to Ohio's existing failure to disclose law requiring people in public spaces to provide their name, address, and date of birth when requested by an officer who reasonably suspects they've committed or are about to commit a criminal offense.
Who reasonably suspects that you've committed an offense, I get. But you are about to. How do you know when I'm walking down the street on my way to get ice cream with my kids that I'm about to commit an offense?
Also, our legal system does not work proactively. We can't criminalize thoughts in your head. I won't use the Prince quote that Scott always does.
But I will give them this. If you have a set of bolt cutters in your hands and it is 2 a.m. and you are outside of a business that is closed for the evening, it looks a little sus. I'm not going to lie. I can see where an officer would be like, stop, drop your weapon.
Okay.
Who are you? Let me see your ID. Well, the problem I have with this law specifically is that I have rights as a passenger.
Mm-hmm.
An officer says to me, I want to see your driver's license. I'm not driving.
I'm just sitting in the car, sir.
I'm just sitting in the car. Is there some requirement that no matter where you go, you have your identification, your papers on you at all times?
And by the way, I do believe that cars in many cases are not deemed public spaces. That is a private
space. Yeah, but if you're on a public street, Sam, I can see that argument too. I'm not saying I'm okay with this. I'm not. If someone said to me as a passenger in the car, I need to see your driver's license, I go, Why?
Well, and the reality of the situation is laws like this and the flock cameras and we, you know, we've been talking about overreach of rights when it comes to just traveling in general. The laws like this are, when applied perfectly, are a good thing. They can be used.
Sure.
The cameras can be used to track down a criminal. They can be used to track down a Amber Alert situation. The problem is when they're used poorly.
Here's the other problem, Sam. Oh my gosh, state to state, there are 90,000 different nuances to these stop and identify laws. And I mean the pages and pages and pages we would have to go through. In four states, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, and Rhode Island, failure to identify is one factor to be considered in decision to arrest. In Arizona, by the way, the law is written specifically, if you're, I don't know, vacationing in Scottsdale, to codify the holding in the Heibel situation, which says, according to that case, that you are required as a person to give your true full name when asked. Meaning, if the officer says, hey, what's your name, buddy? And you say, Seymour Butts. You can't, funny? Yeah.
First name, Nunya, last name, damn business.
If you're in Scottsdale and you get pulled over and the officer says, what is your name, Samuel? You have to tell him your name.
Mm-mm. Nope. Nope.
But a passenger in a car, 913-586-7798, will take your calls on this straight ahead. You are listening to Dana and Parks. You are a passenger in a car. Maybe your spouse is driving. Maybe your teenager is driving. Maybe there's six of you in a big old minivan and you're all going to a concert downtown. Apparently, the Fourth Amendment still matters, right, Sam?
It depends on what state you're in.
Protects us from unreasonable searches and seizures. I personally think it's unreasonable. If I'm a passenger in the car and I'm not gagged and bound with my hands tied behind my back, I think it's unreasonable for someone to say, what are you doing riding in this car? May I have your ID?
And the state of Ohio, and as we have found over our research over the last segment, a number of other states have laws on the books requiring you to identify yourself as a passenger in a vehicle that has been stopped for a traffic violation. Thankfully, the Supreme Court took this up in 2009. And the Supreme Court ruled that while police can, in effect, temporarily detain passengers, because that's what happens if they're in the car during a traffic stop, they cannot legally compel a passenger to provide ID without individualized reasonable suspicion.
Individualized reasonable suspicion.
That the passenger has committed, is committing, or once again is about to commit a crime. Now, there is a difference between asking and ordering. An officer is always legally allowed to ask a passenger for their name or ID. However, unless there is a specific reason to suspect that the passenger is about to commit a crime, they are legally allowed to decline.
But now, to me, if I'm a passenger, Sam, and I look shifty, what is reasonable suspicion? Because if I'm a police officer, I'm going to say, I don't know, Sam, you look shifty to me. Mm-hmm. You look like something's going on with you. And I don't like that. I don't, as an American citizen, I don't like that. I'm not doing anything wrong.
Is it the color of my skin? Is it my tattoos? Is it the way that I'm looking around because I just got pulled over and it's a high tense situation when you get pulled over? I mean, they could come up with any reason. No.
I don't like it.
By the way, 24 states have stop and identify laws still on the books, which I did not know. Kansas is one of them. In Missouri, it says Kansas City only. So
it means it hasn't been challenged.
State law.
It means it hasn't been challenged.
Meaning if they look at you and say you look suspicious, they can walk up to you randomly on the street and demand you identify
yourself.
Have you
seen the meme this week that says, officer, step out of the car, please? And then the reply is, it's 104 degrees outside. Why don't you get in my car and tell me what's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
They laugh when you do that, by the way. They love it when you make jokes like that when you're being pulled over. Let's go to Steven in Olathe. Hey, Steven.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So in a situation where people are pulled over, you know, some officers are pretty aggressive in trying to get your information already, and they're very convincing. But in a pulled over situation, I think that it's a little bit more reasonable to try and get all of the people's video, identification so that they can, you know, officer safety and public safety. But what I also wanted to say was there's a lot of Fourth Amendment accountability videos out there. And there's one that is Kansas City accountability locally. And he'll go out and he'll just stand on sidewalks and he will...
look suspicious.
Look suspicious, yes. And usually it is in front of a bank. Usually it is in front of a financial institution, and he will draw the attention, but it's still not illegal. And, you know, police officers, they will come up and they will throw suspicion at every single reason that they possibly can.
I understand what they're doing, but are they also not inviting issues? The keyboard and the internet warriors that are doing this for clicks, let's be honest. And if there's some education component there, explain it to me.
I thought so too, but, you know, a bank that has 10 cameras outside of its own building videoing the public should not be complaining about a camera that's pointed right back at them. So... you know, it's the 21st century, and, you know, it's just a lot of people, they get uncomfortable. They get uncomfortable because a camera is pointing through a window that the curtains are not drawn on. So
I would be, Stephen, I would be uncomfortable if I was in a car that got pulled over. I don't care who's driving. If I'm a passenger in a car and we get pulled over, you're immediately all uncomfortable, right?
It's never a calm situation.
And aside from all four of us wearing ski masks, you know, and having automatic weapons in our laps, I don't think as a passenger, I should have the right to ride in a car with the person I choose to ride with.
And to bring this back to the flock camera conversation, who is watching the watchers? Who is making sure that this law is not going to be abused? Because I guarantee you, the way that we have learned that police departments work, and we're not anti-police on this program, we're very pro-police. It's natural that you take your colleagues back in most situations. And so when it comes down to brass tacks, who are they going to believe? I bet you an Ohio case is going to make it back to the Supreme Court after that 2009 decision, and they're going to bring this back up again. I will say that the greatest thing that a teacher ever did for me in high school, we spent an entire class talking about your rights during a traffic stop. Now, this was specific to the state of Kansas because the high school I went to was in the state of Kansas. But considering the fact that we're talking about potential misuse of laws in a traffic stop, I will tell you, and this is according to a number of different law outlets, what you can legally do in these situations. You can ask, am I being detained or am I free to go?
Am I being detained or am I free to go?
If you are being detained, they have to have a reason to detain you. If they cannot provide a reason...
How many people are going to be comfortable saying that back to a police officer? And you know as well as I do, the answer is not very
many. You are free to go. And next, and the text line also pointed this out, an officer cannot just say, you look sketchy, as their reasonable suspicion.
But what if you do look sketchy?
And you are legally allowed to ask, what is the reasonable suspicion that I have committed, am going to commit, or might be in part of the commission of a crime? And yet again, if they cannot provide you that detail, technically, legally,
but they're always going to be able to provide you that detail. My issue is I'm not going to get into a back and forth legal argument with a police officer. Even if you are right, you're going to lose that argument every single time. And I'm not saying it's okay. But if the Supreme Court has already ruled about this, why are we talking about this new law in Ohio? You know why? Because it hasn't been challenged yet. Which means this stuff goes on and on unchecked until someone who has knowledge about the law or the money to fight it stands up for everybody else.
And by the way, the number one overarching thing that all of these law firms boast when it comes to your traffic stop rights, if you are losing the, hey, am I being detained question situation, just comply and fight back later.
Yes, yes. With a lawyer, which costs money, Sam, which most people don't have. Hello, Eric and Ray Moore. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on? How y'all doing?
How are you doing?
Doing okay. I was a law enforcement officer for a minute. And like you said, it's up to the discretion of the officer a lot of times. And then when somebody looks suspicious, What looks suspicious? It could be it's like a prosecutor saying that they can prosecute a ham sandwich. it depends on the person's his opinion.
Yeah.
Where he grew up at, his experiences in life. If, you know, well, this guy in a black hoodie looks suspicious. Then you have somebody else in a black hoodie, you wouldn't think it's suspicious. So it's up to your discretion, pretty much.
Well, and Eric, we all know stories where if it's a woman who is driving or that you've pulled over or that you're thinking about detaining, does your bias as, let's say you're a larger male police officer, do you let your guard down a little bit because it's a female or a mom? Because there have been horrible women in our headlines who have done horrible things. Robbed banks, serial killers, killed their children. Like, he's absolutely right about the bias. It is, whether you mean to or not, your life experience in any job when you're faced with a situation like that, right?
Well, and there's bias around the vehicle, too. I guarantee you that the perfectly well-kept minivan that looks like it gets washed once a week and gets its regular oil changes
could absolutely have a crazy person behind the wheel, Sam.
But it's going to get much less bias than a number of other vehicles.
Probably. Like the sweet old lady that we were behind the other day that got out of the car after she parked in an expectant mother parking space.
Based on the picture that you showed me her vehicle, she's getting some bias.
I'm sure she's in church every single Sunday, but she ain't expecting a baby. Yet there she went, taking that space reserved for a mom
now, ma'am,
that I never got when I was pregnant, but that's beside the point.
That is reasonable suspicion right there.
A couple stories to pass on, not looking to make these topics. They have a list now of the food most likely to cause the... you know, the parasite that we've been telling you about.
Cyclosporiasis.
Now in several counties in Kansas and a couple in Missouri. We know now that this thing that causes, you know.
Explosive watery diarrhea.
Is caused when it enters your body through contaminated produce.
Explosive watery diarrhea.
If you're unlucky enough to ingest it, according to Fox 4, you may get stuck with weeks of
explosive watery diarrhea,
as well as frequent and, quote, sometimes explosive bowels.
Most of the time, watery.
According to the CDC.
And all the time, diarrhea.
Okay, historically, the most common contaminated foods are raspberries, basil, cilantro, green onions, snow peas, lettuce, and salad mixes. Taco Bell, this is not a joke, Taco Bell has removed some produce from its menu items.
Yeah.
Until they can figure out exactly where this is coming from. You know where they are zeroing in right now? With a bullet? I mean, I'm so sorry if you have relatives in Michigan. Michigan has got it bad.
Tens of thousands of cases.
Oh, you guys. It's, it's not good. And it's up thousands per day each and every day. They do believe in Michigan. Early results indicate that lettuce or salad greens may be the possible source. I'm telling you, this is why I eat steak.
Oh, pardon me. We're up to 4,000 cases in Michigan, tens of thousands nationwide.
Yes. Here's the other problem. The incubation period, you guys, with this thing is up to 2 weeks. Here's the problem with that.
So this food's been circulating around the country for 2 weeks now.
If you said to me, if I got deathly ill today for 3 weeks and could not get out of the bathroom, if you said to me, hey, what did you eat? I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Really? Did you just make that noise?
How many people listening are going to be able to trace back what they ate 2 weeks ago? I have no idea what we had 2 days ago for lunch, Sam. None.
I would, but yeah, I'm
They rare. Are saying in the interim, purchase whole heads of lettuce.
Yeah, do not buy the pre-mixed salad kits, which, just had a pre-mixed salad kit for dinner last night.
That's great.
So that's cool.
Well, we'll check in on you in 2 weeks, Sam.
Thanks.
Buy whole heads of lettuce rather than pre-washed bagged lettuce or pre-mixed salad kits. Discard the outer layers. You're always supposed to do that with the head of lettuce. Wash the inner leaves.
Basically, wash each leaf on its own.
And prioritize cooking for any greens that can be cooked. Cooking to a temperature of 158 degrees Fahrenheit is the safest option. Here's the deal. when people are saying, well, how do I know if I have this?
Oh, you're going to know.
Oh, you're going to know.
Real quick.
Explosive watery diarrhea.
And in the past, the contaminations of cyclosporia have involved, again, the bag salad kits, cilantro, basil, raspberries, snow peas, green onions.
Yep.
I also heard on a report earlier today, strawberries are up there.
Oh, great.
And of course, they always recommend to avoid contaminating your produce with fecal matter prior
is that
to eating it.
Actually one of the recommendations?
That is one of the recommendations on how to avoid cyclosporia.
Good talk.
To not Good poop talk. On your food.
When we get back, a restaurant that has a very unique, you know, come and grab and go kind of thing going on, has announced they are closing 50 spots due to declining sales. When we get back, we're going to tell you what it is and why I never thought this was going to work. It's not really a restaurant at all. When you see the headline restaurant, I don't consider this to be a restaurant. I don't consider it to be fast food. It's in its own category, and a bunch of them are closing down. We'll tell you what that is straight ahead on Dana and Parks. So for any one of you married or in a long-term relationship, it really is a series of saying back and forth to each other every single day, what do you want to do for dinner? How many times do you think you say that a week? What do you want to do for lunch? What do you want to do for dinner? Got any plans for
dinner?
Seven
times a week.
Do you want to go out? Should we go to the store? What do we have in the fridge? Like, these conversations for all of us are ongoing. It's part of adulting. What are we going to do for dinner? For me, there are two camps. Okay? There are two choices when someone says, what do you want to do for dinner? You can stay in and cook or eat leftovers. That's choice A. Choice B is you go out, grab something and eat it, sit down at a restaurant and eat it, come back home. That's it. The restaurant that has just announced they are closing 50 spots over declining sales lives in the very unique and bizarre gray area between those two
things.
We're
in the middle, yeah. We used to go every Tuesday night.
The owners of Papa Murphy's Pizza Chain, the old take and bake, are preparing to close up to 50 restaurants, citing years of declining sales and shrinking store counts. The announcement came during the group's second quarter earnings call, based in Canada. They plan to close 68 company-owned restaurants across its brands. 45 to 50 of those are expected to be specific Papa Murphy's locations, okay? Next 6 to 9 months, you're going to see the closures. The restructuring comes after years of declining store numbers for the Take and Bake pizza chain. They used to have 1,168 restaurants. The number had fallen to about 1,000 by the end of 2025. They currently operate in 34 states as well as Canada. Okay, here's why this didn't work. If I'm going to leave my house and go out, like just leaving the house and going out or going and driving somewhere after work is a thing. So if you're going to do that thing and go out and physically enter a business, don't you want to complete the transaction? We're just going to eat and we're done. With the take and bake, you have to physically go out, buy the thing, get the thing. Then you have to come back home. Whoops, forgot to start the oven. Bake the thing and then eat the thing. It's got to be one or the other. I'm either going out to eat or I'm not going out to eat. I don't like the gray area.
I mean, we loved it because, it was post-high school. I was going over for dinner on a Tuesday night and they had their deal where you could get two pizzas for whatever the price was. And I would just pick them up on my way to my mom's house. The oven would be ready. Pop them in the oven. 14 minutes. Boom. Dinner is served.
Okay. How much cheaper is it than just going and getting the pizza? Like an actual pizza where you go or
like
they go?
Like $7-$8.
Okay. So you're saving what, $5?
$7 or $8. I mean, if you count the cost of gas to drive to and from the Papa Murphy's establishment, maybe $5.
To me, it's the act of having to get out and go and do the thing. And then once you're out, what your goal is to eat, you haven't completed that goal after going out.
See, I don't think that it was the type of service that Papa Murphy's provided that is going to be their ultimate demise. I think it's just the oversaturation.
You think there's too many of them.
There's too many of them, and quite frankly, and I know I'm the health nut granola guy.
No, I think we're too lazy, Sam. People don't want the extra step of having to bake the thing.
Well, then you can just DoorDash the uncooked pizza, cook it in your, I don't know. I think it's because there's too many options and people are finally actually wanting to be a little bit more healthy. And rather than buying pizza all the time, they're looking for better options.
I'll tell you this. We had pizza for the first time in probably 2 months on Sunday. It was glorious. I just had kind of forgotten about it. And we're coming home and I go, why don't we go to Johnny's and get a pizza? Like the Johnny's down here.
Yeah.
They have phenomenal pizza. We went in, we picked it up. We walked out. It's all done. We eat it. And we that's it. That's there was
it wasn't
no
cold when you got
there
home?
Was no other step. It was not okay. Cold when we got home, right? I'm sorry if you're a fan. They're closing 50 stores.
We love that cowboy.
Hey, we rarely do this, but today we bid on this, and I'm excited. We have an author coming into the studio, and it's hyper local. How much do you really know about the border war? Maybe you went to Mizzou and you can't stand Kansas, and you don't know why. I don't know how to explain it. Maybe you went to Kansas and, well, we all know how we feel. Why? A local author has really researched this all the way back. And there's a Kansas City connection to all of it, by the way. And we're going to speak with him straight ahead on Dana and Parks. You're going to love it. Stick around for that.
Get the Dana and Parks podcast, KMBZ.com, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just make sure to like, subscribe, and download.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.